I guess the best way to describe government policy is like a person trying to drive a car in a rough patch. You know full well it's important not to overcorrect, because when you overcorrect, you end up in the ditch. When we make it through this rough patch, our driving's going to be more smooth.
Yeah, Mensa Man was in rare form today, True Seekers, talking to them, our economists. You know, educating him on the economy, showing he can be wise about money and stuff. He sounded like a hyper kindergartner off his Ritalin, talking about rambling man. Woohoo! He's either off his meds or back on them, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. We have a very eclectic program for you tonight. Indeed, we're introducing a new segment called A Moment with Bob. We also have Mensa Man and all sorts of fun and frivolity plans. So don't go away. And if I haven't mentioned it lately, I'd like to invite you again to become a Nova M founding member. One of the advantages is you get this 80-minute Scott Ritter, Mike Malloy video. It's available in its entirety to founding club members. There's all sorts of advantages to being a member. And I haven't talked about it lately, but I'd like you to become a member. It costs $9.99 a month, $10 a month, or $120 a year. Just go to novamradio.com and see what's available if you do become a founding member. All right. This afternoon, I spent some time in front of the electric TV. Do you have free speech TV on your cable or satellite system? I do. And if you've not gone to FSTV or Colors or Link, there are several channels that are available if your provider has them that are incredible. I spent some time today listening to the Winter Soldier, Iraq and Afghanistan 2008 convocation that is going on over the next 4 days. I think it started today. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, I believe. No, it started Thursday. It's an event in D.C. It's being held in D.C. to not only to protest the war in Iraq, but if you listen closely to some of the testimony provided by these veterans, you'll hear them protest war in general. The U.S. veterans and active duty soldiers who are taking part have a lot to say. In addition, what I listened to today was audio-video presentation of civilians from Iraq, their take on the war put together by these soldiers. Just, you know, raw video, questions and answers. An intelligence sergeant, Selena Kappa, said at the launch of the four-day Winter Soldier event, quote, "There's an upswell of disgust and disapproval for the Iraq war in the military." She said the difficulty is letting them, the soldiers, realize they are legally entitled to speak out about it other than to other service members. You can't foment, I guess, that's the end of the quote. I guess you can't foment insurrection or rebellion in the ranks, but you can certainly talk to civilians about your attitude about the war. Camilo Mejia, the first conscientious objector to the Iraq war, who went to prison for it, went a step further. He told reporters, quote, "I want our servicemen and women to know that standing up to an immoral occupation is not only their right, but also their duty to their country and to humanity." He said at the opening news conference yesterday, quote, "My first mission in Iraq was to run a prisoner of war camp where we used sensory and sleep deprivation techniques prior to interrogation. Now, you remember Mejia was court-martialed for refusing to redeploy to his unit after 2 weeks' leave, and he spent 9 months in military jail. What is typical and not surprising about this, the hearings, the meeting, this convocation, this event, is heavily attended by foreign news correspondents, but hardly anybody from U.S. media cares enough to attend. And I can understand that. As we've said so many times in this program, and you know this, the function of American media is not to get you to think. It's to the contrary. It's to get you not to think. It's to make you forget. So you won't see coverage of this. I'm surprised. I couldn't even find it on C-SPAN. Maybe, you know, a month from now they'll play this. But if you have free speech TV, now there's another way to see it. I'll give you the website. And try to get this the first time, okay? Because during the program, I'm not going to be able to answer all the emails that usually come in that say, hey, would you repeat that? It's very simple. WarComesHome.org. WarComesHome.org. And I believe they are streaming live audio and video. Today, it went from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tomorrow, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The website, again, is warcomeshome.org, warcomeshome.org, because you're not going to get it on American television. They simply, American media will not cover this. They will, by God, not cover this, okay? The chairman of the board of Iraq Veterans Against the War, IVAW, which has organized the four-day gathering, that would be Camilla Mejia, spoke of the groundswell of resistance within the U.S. military to this war. And don't forget, next week, March 19th, we begin the sixth year of this war. How long was World War II, American involvement in World War II, from December 7th, 1941, until August 10th, 1945. Not even 4 years. World War, for Christ's sake, two. But this one, this Iraq and Afghanistan mess that this filthy little coward George Bush got us into, we are now entering the sixth year. Mejia said, servicemen and women are refusing en masse to participate in this war. I have seen a rapid and inevitable growth of dissent within our ranks. And at this Winter Soldier event that you can stream live on your computer, some 200 soldiers like Selena Coppa and Camilo Mejia will give eyewitness testimony about what they lived through during the deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan and the events that have swallowed them since. Now, the last time veterans held a Winter Soldier event was in 1971. It was Vietnam veterans. John Kerry was there. 100 servicemen and 16 civilians described atrocities committed against civilians in South Vietnam. So this is Winter Soldier 2008. And the name Winter Soldier is derived. It's kind of the antithesis of a summer soldier that was the writer, the Revolutionary War writer, American Revolutionary War writer Thomas Paine, described in The Crisis. The lines are these, quote, "These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will in this crisis shrink from the service of his country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman." And from that, they have taken the term winter soldier. So if you do anything this weekend, if you have time, you know, I realize we're all pressed for time, but warcomeshome.org starts at 9 a.m. again tomorrow and runs to 7 p.m. all day. And then on Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And, of course, next Wednesday is the beginning of the sixth year of this murder and slaughter and mayhem and destruction to our people and to our Constitution and to the Iraqi people. And if I got that in the wrong order, I apologize, but you know what I'm saying. Well, I found, I just want to share a little bit more with you when we come back after the break very briefly of what I listened to today. Just, you know, just in my own words. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
21 past the hour, I got an email. PacificaRadio.org possibly is carrying live feeds also of the Winter Soldier Iraq and Afghanistan 2008. The event going on started yesterday, goes through Sunday night. But you can pick up the live feed, audio and video, tomorrow and Sunday. Tomorrow beginning at 9 a.m., Sunday beginning at 10 a.m. by going to warcomeshome.org. Now, when I watched it this afternoon, it reminded me of something that Scott Ritter said when we were in Phoenix a couple of weeks ago during the event there. One of the questions that came from the audience that Jeff Farias presented to both Scott and me concerned the use of depleted uranium in the construction of, for example, of shells that are fired to penetrate bunkers or penetrate enemy tanks or what have you, and the use of these kinds of weapons and cluster bombs. And of course, my response was, focusing on the hideousness of these weapons and how they should be outlawed. Scott's response, interestingly, and he prefaced his response by saying, I'm going to disagree with this on this one. He said, when you're in a combat situation where you're being fired on and your life's at stake, you don't care about Geneva Convention or rules of engagement or depleted uranium or cluster bombs. You want to survive. And, sadly, sure, depleted uranium destroys the environment. Cluster bombs destroy children because so many of them don't explode. But he made his point. Scott made his point. And today, in the testimony I heard, in a summing up, one of the soldiers who was conducting this forum today made exactly the same point. He said it's the atrocities that have occurred in this occupation are not the result of failure on the part of soldiers or failure on the part of leadership. They are the result, the expected consequences that come as a result of an occupation. That, and almost word for word, what Scott Ritter said, in the heat of a fight, I don't want to use the term firefight, it sounds like I'm trying to be cool, in the heat of a fight between, let's say, U.S. soldiers and insurgents, rules of engagement or the Geneva Conventions or what sort of weapon is being used, none of that comes into play for the soldier or, one would argue, for the insurgent. What does come into play is an immediate need to survive, to complete the mission, whatever the mission is. And for most people who go into a combat zone, it's my understanding, the mission is to go home, is to do your time and get out of there alive. And I had just a tiny little epiphany today about this. Even though Scott said it 2 weeks ago, it didn't quite sink in. When Ritter said it, I thought, yeah, well, okay, that's what somebody who's been in combat. Scott left off the part about the problem is the occupation. Not that he's not aware of that. Of course he's aware of it. But when the soldier today made that point, it suddenly dawned on me, rather than continuing to blame individual soldiers or Marines for the kind of breakdown that occurs in a combat situation. I'm not taking away personal responsibility from anybody. I'm just saying, it's always seemed to me, and I'm sure it has to you too, that when we send people into an area to kill, if they kill the wrong way, we can court-martial them. What? What is that? Now, I understand the difference in killing someone who's firing at you and walking into an Iraqi house and killing a family. I understand. The problem, though, is not a breakdown in chain of command. It's not a disrespect for the rules of engagement. It's not a turning away from the Geneva Conventions. The problem is the occupation itself. Whether it is by us in Iraq or the Israelis in the occupied territories. The problem is the occupation. And this is the point that the soldier made. The occupation is the cause of the breakdown in rational behavior. There is no such thing as rational behavior in a war. War itself is irrational. There's no need. There's no debate around that. And if you are super intellect and want to get into semantics, please, not me. Send your email to someone else. War is irrational. It's a complete breakdown of reason and logic and common sense and eventually ethical conduct and morality. There's no such thing. As you know, I shudder sometimes at the term Bush has taken us into an illegal war. What the hell is a legal war? Okay, I know there are terms of legality, but they are irrational. They are irrational to begin with. War, killing, mass killing, the slaughtering of people, especially the fact that so many people in the wars in this new century, in the last century, The casualties are civilians, just civilians. Go and listen to some of this tomorrow. WarComesHome.org.
Sometimes I'm happy, you know, this is... But wars are not a time of joy. These aren't joyous times.
Oh, God. All right, a couple emails here. 26 before the hour. This is Mark in St. Augustine writes, Mike, I like your show and agree with and respect your points of view. Now that the buttering up is done, here's a name I'd like to address. Hugo Chavez. You pronounce his first name like Hugo. When everyone else on Earth, besides people in the U.S. who speak solely American English, pronounce it as Hugo with a silent H. My ears twitch a little every time you pronounce it Hugo. And while I'm sorry to nitpick, it's probably painful to your Spanish-speaking or bi or multilingual listeners, too. And for someone who is revered in South and Central America and probably to many thinking people in the U.S., it would be considerate respectful to call him by his proper name. Chucklenuts I can live with, though. Mark in St. Augustine. Hugo. All right. Fair enough. Hugo. Hugo Chavez. Bruce in California writes, regarding waterboarding, Mike, the term waterboarding shouldn't be used. It sounds like something you do on the beach on Sunday. I mean, how bad could waterboarding be? The Nazis had a cutesy little name for it as well. Das U-Boot. Doesn't that sound kind of like a child's game? The only term that should be used is controlled drowning interrogation, because that's what it is. Controlled drowning interrogation. Okay, Bruce in California. Bob in Groton, Mass. writes, Mike, how come when a Blackwater combatant, they are clearly not regular soldiers, causes a death, we are told that no law, Neither U.S. military nor U.S. civilian nor Iraqi applies to them. But when someone whom we claim belongs to no regular army does something to us, we have no problem inventing, after the fact, a whole new and twisted system of justice to handle them, even to the point of execution. How come, Bob? I don't know, but it's a good question. Joyce in Arkansas, our bureau chief there, writes, Mike, I hope you would tell your listeners, some of whom, like me, may be weary of mainstream media's constant bias negativity toward one presidential candidate, about a program that airs on XM satellite radio. It's called POTUS 08 on channel 130, on the air 24/7, and is truly unbiased and definitely refreshing. Just sorry I didn't try it sooner. After one day, my sanity is returning to near normal. After months of listening to one-sided distortions and divisive hatefulness, even on sites like Air America, I can listen to political discussions that aren't biased. Okay, Channel 130, check it out. Now, as far as the race, the Democratic primary, this is at novamradio.com. I think this is a good idea. It's put out there by Shelley Drobny, and I think it's a good idea. He writes at Shelley's Space. You can find this at novamradio.com. He writes, I was wondering what new information the uncommitted superdelegates need to make their decision now and stop the bleeding. These uncommitted delegates need to show more logic and political courage. Hillary cannot win the pledged delegate vote. It is also unlikely that she will win the cumulative popular vote. At the end of the primary elections, it is likely that Obama will have about 1,900 delegates and Clinton will have 1,800, which includes the committed superdelegates. Approximately 350 superdelegates are still uncommitted. If each candidate gets one half of those, or 175 of the remaining uncommitted delegates, Obama would get the nomination. For Hillary to win, she would need the support of almost two-thirds of the remaining uncommitted superdelegates. My suggestion, Shelley writes, for these 350 uncommitted delegates is to show some courage and logic. They need to understand that the five-plus months of cumulative popular vote is meaningless. And they should understand that a protracted primary period is divisive. And if this lasts until June, it will damage the unity of the Democrats. The superdelegates must know that overturning the elected delegate result would seriously reduce the chances of victory in November. But those are the rules, and I will accept their choice. The role of the superdelegates is to be like the elder statesmen of the party. They're supposed to be the grown-ups that protect the party cause. They cannot treat this like a vote in the House and the Senate. A decision needs to be made now to save resources and prevent the divisiveness that will continue if this goes on until June. The superdelegates have the power and the responsibility to make their choice now. I tend to agree with that. I've said before that except for around the edges, I don't see a whole lot of difference in these two corporate Democrats. I really don't. Which is not really a put down of either one of them. They are who they are. They are supported by who they're supported by. If this is the best that the Democratic Party can do, if this is the best that we can do as voters in selecting a Democratic Party candidate, well then, okay, I'll wave the white flag and say, all right, if this is the best we can do, fine. Fine. I wrestle constantly with the idea of voting for whoever the Democrat is, Obama or Clinton. But I've come to the conclusion that once again, I am going to sell my soul and vote for one of these corporate Democrats, whichever one gets the nomination. But I agree with the point Drobny is making. This thing, If it just continues the way it's continuing, it's ratcheting up. You know this. It is turning into a race-based, gender-based, personal attack. It's getting worse and worse. It's not going to stop. And I'll tell you something else. Media loves this. Oh, these rotten bastards on talk television especially. Oh, they love it. You know, the whole attitude of talk television is the old dictum, let's you and him fight. They don't want to get involved. They'll instigate it. They'll throw the mud. They'll line up a thousand people on this side, a thousand people on that side. They'll allow the mudslinging to continue on their tacky-ass little programs. But you know and I know that they don't care who wins, because no matter who wins, they win. It doesn't make any difference. When you have three candidates, all of whom are pretty much committed, if not wholly committed, to the idea that what is good for corporations in this country is good for the rest of us. And all three of these candidates are thus committed. When you have that sort of an event, what's left? What's left to do? It's to cause them to, did you hear what she said about you? Oh, did you hear what he said about you? Oh, did you hear what McCain said about both? Oh, did you hear this? Oh, did you hear that? That's all it is. This has become garbage. And to what extent the three egos are at play here is also, you know, I frankly don't care about McCain. I do believe that McCain is crazy. I don't see how anyone can go through 6 years in a prison camp, whether it's at Guantanamo or Hanoi or someplace in the Soviet Gulag, or Folsom prison. I don't see how anyone can go through 6 years of prison and not in that kind of prison and not be somehow, to degrees greater or lesser than the norm, insane. McCain is insane. I don't have any problem with age. I think 71 is a great age. I hope I get there. I have a problem with his mental health, and I don't think he has any right now. So that gets down to Clinton and Obama. They are interchangeable parts. Come on. The women who are madly committed to Hillary are madly committed to Hillary because they're women. The people who are madly committed to Obama are madly committed to Obama because he represents something else other than womanhood, youth, energy. There's also the idea of, maybe his candidacy means, and this is, I felt this during his candidacy, maybe this means we've somehow transcended the race issue. But none of these attitudes have to do with what either of these two Democratic candidates are going to do politically once they win the presidency. We don't talk about that. Jesus God, every time I bring it up on this program, I'm swamped with emails to say, could you send me that comparative list you got? Because it's not out there anyplace else. I mean, you have to go to websites to get this. It's not being presented by media. Media don't care. They don't give a damn. Who wins? McCain? Obama, Clinton, they don't care, because no matter who wins, they win. Do you understand that? Do you really get that? I think you do. I think you really do get that. And as far as Obama and Clinton are concerned, somebody please, go ahead. I mean, you send me emails on this. Tell me an essential, fundamental difference between these two candidates. I'm not talking about around the edges. Tell me the essential, fundamental difference between these two candidates, leaving out gender and or race. I'd be real curious to see what you say is the essential, fundamental difference between these two candidates, Obama and Clinton. I really would. Love to see it. I'm not being a smartass here. I'd love to see it. Because, you know, I have offered several nights examples of how their policies are damn near identical. And if they differ slightly, the difference is in semantics, and a difference perhaps a little tiny bit, maybe in execution, around the edges, the fringes. So as far as making a decision now, yeah, what's the point here? What's the point? Now, and don't media love this, don't these talking goons on television just love to stir up the problem about what to do about the delegates, the non-existent delegates from Florida and Ohio, or Michigan. What to do about Pennsylvania? This is bat crap. This is a way not only to destroy a political party, the Democratic Party, but it's also a way to absolutely corrupt and pollute and further destroy our system. Come on. We've got to get over this. The Democratic Party better make a decision and make it fast. Pick one of these candidates, and let's get down to the serious business of beating John McCain.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Yeah, we're gonna have some information for you when we come back after the break about Bush's inner warrior, the one that's just lusting to go enjoy some of the romance in Afghanistan. Jesus, God. Steve writes in, have you heard the new Air Force slogan? It is, above all. That's the Air Force slogan, the new one, above all. You know, the Army used to have an army of one, and, you know, the Marine Corps, a few good men. The Air Force is above all. Above all. Oh, über alles. Deutschland über alles. Remember that? Yeah, that's where I've heard above all before. Deutschland über alles. Gott mit uns. That's what the German soldier, I believe, used to have engraved on his belt buckle. Gott mit uns. God is with us. Gott mit uns. And now we have above all. Über alles. How soon before we have ein Staat, ein Volk, ein Führer? Oh, God. I'm getting carried away again. Let's go to your phone calls. Starting with Christian, who is calling in Dallas, or from Dallas, listening on KMNY. Do we have Christian? Hey, Christian. Christian? All right, somebody is eating Christian. Let's put it on hold, and we'll try it later. All right, let's go to Rich from Springfield, Missouri. Rich, welcome to the program. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
Pretty good. I was telling your speaker there, I hadn't heard you on the radio since you were on 890, like, what, 12, 13, 14 years ago?
Well, actually, it was about 8.
Was it 8? Because I know it had been a long time.
It's been
a long since I've been up around Chicago.
Yeah. But long enough, though.
Yeah, oh, no bad. I've had leave too. That place too cold and wind. I was telling him, you know, it'd be nice if they could just push both of those fools aside and pull somebody like Edwards or somebody up through the middle. I know they can't, but you know, for the sake of the party, just bring a neutral party or somebody in there. Just the only difference between him and Hillary, he's got charisma, she's got boots, and together they'd make a nice looking black.
They make a nice-looking what?
Black woman. I mean, you know, I mean, that. I guess I probably shouldn't have said that.
But. No, you probably shouldn't have. But you did, didn't you?
Yeah, but I did. I probably shouldn't have, but I did. Somebody will probably be mad about this.
But
I used to listen to Limbaugh and them a lot. I used to think I was one of them hard right-wing conservatives until I got to finding out what a populist was, and I found out I fell a little bit left to right, but, you know, right or center still.
Yeah. Well, are you on the road right now, Rich?
Yes. Yeah, I sure am.
Okay. Are you an over-the-road trucker?
Yeah. I used to be an independent, and I'm a teamster now. I drive for Roadway Express.
Well, thank goodness you're in a union.
Well, I'm a laid-off teacher at the moment, thanks to Bubba.
Okay, well, I hope you get back to work.
Yeah, I hope I do, too.
All right, Rich, listen, you're breaking up kind of substantially. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Let's talk again. Don't wait 12 or 13 years. You know, stay in touch, all right? Are we having problems again? Right now we have some violent thunderstorms raging through the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. So if anything happens and you start hearing a rebroadcast, no, Total Information Awareness Network hasn't gotten us. It's just, you know, I was listening today. I was out in the car. I was listening to NPR. The classical station here in Atlanta, WABE, listening to the music, which I have to do now. It's either that or flame out. I can't even listen to rock and roll anymore in the car. It's just, you know, I'm just way too tense. So I'm listening to classical music, and it comes up to 1 minute past the hour. That's when they get the they do the NPR news feed from Washington. So the classical DJ who's playing the music here in Atlanta says, you know, it's 1 minute past the hour. Let's get a news update from NPR in Washington. And then there's dead silence for about 15 seconds. And she comes back on and says, well, we're having a problem with the feed. So, you know, been there, done that. Almost pulled over and called her and said, yeah, I know how that works. All of a sudden, your show goes in the tank because of the mechanics of trying to do something long distance, right? Even a simple feed down an ISDN line from D.C. So, anyway, just so you know, we are having some real nasty thunderstorms here. It is almost 10 o'clock at night, and they were nasty enough to wake Molly up. So anyway, back to your phone calls. Dinah is calling from Queens, New York, listening on Sirius. Is it Dinah or Dina?
Dina.
Hi, Dina.
What's going on, Mike? I love you, man, even though you don't want to be loved.
I always... Who doesn't want to be loved? What are you talking about?
Well, because it'll make you look soft.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I don't want to do that.
That's right.
I don't want to do that.
No, don't love me. I'm a hard ass.
I enjoy your page, goddammit. I first heard you on Air America, and then last
What? Oh, my goodness. We can, Dina? Dina, we can say the one word, but not the other. I don't know why. Yeah, the thing is, Dina, we can say, you know, the first word, the GD word you said is permissible. The AH word you said is not. What, Kathy?
I just said go figure. I feel so sorry for our serious listeners, almost as sorry as I feel for you having to restrain yourself. And the one I feel the most sorry for, of course, is our dear Molly, who will probably be kicked out of preschool next year her colorful expression.
When she cuts loose with a couple of, yeah, I hear you. All right, Dina, if we were totally serious, satellite radio, you could say whatever you wanted to, but we do have some weird rules. Next time you call in, I want you to call in again. Love to hear from you since we finally hooked up again. But ask Ian what you can say and can't say in terms of vile, rotten, foul language like your radio host. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Welcome back. It is about 6:30 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on the Nova M Radio Network. Email from Bob, Linear Bob, who is listening to the KPHX stream in San Jose, California. Linear Bob writes, he mentions that Winter Soldier is also being carried, I think we mentioned this a minute ago, live by the Pacifica Radio Network. I think there are five or six stations around the country where you can listen via radio stations, or you can go to their stream. He watched some today. Bob did. He writes, just listening to the stories of those soldiers is heartrending. These men and women have experienced things that no one should have to experience. What I heard today are stories these men and women will have burned into their memories for the rest of their lives. Subjecting our soldiers to the kinds of things I heard today should be in and of itself criminal. I'm talking about the physical and psychological damage our so-called leadership has led us into. I think these stories represent war crimes on the order of those prosecuted at the end of World War II in Nuremberg, the neocon cabal that took control of the executive branch and led our soldiers into Afghanistan and Iraq, should be in the dock facing life in prison without the possibility of parole. And there's more here about the Democratic race. Thanks, Bob. if you have time tomorrow, just if you don't have Free Speech TV on your cable or satellite system, then go to warcomeshome.org and listen to some of this tomorrow, okay? It's really something to hear. How many, let me see a show of hands, how many are you are familiar with Peter Beinart? He's a columnist for Time Magazine and the Washington Post, and I think he also writes for the New Republic. I found this, somebody sent this to me. This is from something called Israel E-News, Israel Electronic News. Israel E-News bills itself as Israel's daily e-magazine, electronic magazine. This is written by Philip Weiss. Under the heading, Washington Post columnist gives AIPAC talks on how to help Israel in the 08 election. And Philip Weiss writes, according to the AIPAC website, tomorrow in New York, Peter Beinart, a columnist for Time and the Washington Post and a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, will be giving a, quote, briefing, end quote, to, quote, discuss Jewish involvement in American politics. He will talk of the role that the pro-Israel community can play in the upcoming elections, end quote. Weiss writes, sounds like a pep talk. Philip Rice, who writes for Israel's Daily Magazine, goes on, I emailed AIPAC about going to the event, and Hillel Stern, a so-called leadership manager, called to say that the briefing is off the record. I imagine, Philip writes, the same is true of Beinart's appearance at the Knoxville AIPAC next month. And I see that Beinart also spoke 2 weeks back in Philadelphia's AIPAC, in Philadelphia to AIPAC's so-called Senate Club, people who give over $10,000 to AIPAC, where he also addressed, quote, the role that the pro-Israel community can play in the coming elections, end quote. Philip Weiss goes on, journalists should be allowed to make money from speaking engagements, but I find Beinart's appearance is unseemly. AIPAC is a controversial organization. Or anyway, it is an important advocacy group on a central issue in the election. I wonder what a Time and Washington Post columnist is advocating to advocates about. Good question, Philip. He goes on. More important, Beinart's 2006 book titled The Good Fight urged Americans to make their country great again by going to war against terror in Iraq and elsewhere, and in doing so, utterly suppressed the Israel-Palestine issue. Israel and Palestine are mentioned in the index. They show up glancingly in the text. The big lesson of the book is a neoconservative lesson that tyranny breeds jihad. Not American policies in the Middle East, but tyranny. This argument might be more convincing if its proponents would at least acknowledge a simple fact that Palestinian conditions are a red flag of injustice across the Muslim world. Beinart's complete failure to mention the hateful and illegal Israeli occupation of the West Bank is, of course, consistent with many other pro-war Jewish voices, including Paul Berman, Lawrence Kaplan, Bill Kristol, and Ken Pollack. That murderer's row of intellectuals who pushed the Iraq war and merged liberalism with neoconservatism. None of them saw the Israeli occupation or Palestinian conditions as a real problem. The AIPAC notices confirm what I've suspected about Beinart, a pro-Israel agenda. There's nothing wrong with having an agenda. Almost everyone's got one. What's wrong is when journalists hide ideas that are important to them from the public. Will AIPAC or Time Magazine or the Washington Post review the decision to bar reporters from Beinart's talk? That appeared on Israel's daily e-magazine, Israel E-News. Written by Philip Weiss, not by some anti-Semite who just wants to see the death of Judaism, which I will probably get emails now accusing me of. Bush said if he were younger, he would love to work in Afghanistan. This has to be one of the most bizarre statements of any so-called president of the United States in the history of this republic. Yesterday, Bush got an earful about problems and progress in Afghanistan, where that war has dragged on longer than the Iraq war. It's being ignored because of the slaughter in Iraq, According to Reuters news agency, in a video conference, Bush heard from U.S. military and civilian personnel about the challenges ranging from fighting local government and police corruption to persuading farmers to abandon the poppy drug trade for other crops. Bush also heard tales of all-night tea drinking sessions to coax local residents into cooperating, and of tribesmen crossing mountains to attend government meetings seen as building blocks for the country's democracy in the making. Bush said during the conference, quote, "I must say I'm a little envious. If I were slightly younger and not employed here, I think it would be a fantastic experience to be on the front lines of helping this young democracy succeed. It must be exciting for you, in some ways romantic, in some ways, you know, confronting danger. You're really making history, and thanks." War as a romantic, exciting enterprise. Son of a bitch. Boy, I'd like to show George W. Bush some photographs. They're all over the internet, George, if you get somebody to turn yours on and show it to you. Pictures of people who have experienced this romantic, exciting event that you're talking about. You know, arms and limbs blown off. You ought to see the pictures of some of the corpses, George, especially the little children. They're unnerving. They really are. They're very unnerving when you see a five-year-old with his face blown away. And what you are looking at is the back part of the child's skull. And you're looking at it from the front. Stuff like that. Yeah, real romantic stuff. Or when you see U.S. soldiers who have been hit by an IED inside their unprotected Humvee, which immediately becomes something akin to, oh, I don't know, a pressure cooker with a piece of raw chicken. And what happens is the young soldiers, the top of his head will explode, literally explode, blow off, George, so you can peer down the top of the U.S. soldier's head and actually see his brain. Huh? Romantic. Exciting. And if you look down where the soldier's legs used to be, you see white, sharp protrusions. Those are his thigh bones, George, because of legs. His legs and his feet have been turned into red mist. Oh, and he's still gurgling. And he will for probably another 90 seconds. You miserable son of a bitch.
I looked over Jordan, and what did I see? Saw a U.S. Marine, how looked at me. I swam in your pools, lay under your palm trees. I looked in the eyes of the Indian, who lay on the letter of every step.
It wasn't all that long ago that we started military operations. We've been there, what, how many days? Are you counting the days since we've been there? Because I'm not.
And the bravery of being out of range. Yeah, the person is best. Oh, man, what the hell are you gonna kill next?
Nobody can threaten this country. Oh, they may be able to bomb our buildings.
No, I don't want to listen to much more of that. I'll start getting crazy. Yeah, Bush says if he were younger and wasn't employed here, he thinks it would be a fantastic experience. Why to be on the front lines and, you know, be romantic and, you know, confronting danger, and it's exciting. When he was a young man, of course, he was a cowardly son of a bitch that ran like a scared bunny. Ran like a Vietnam. Oh, no! Wasn't romantic then, was it, George, huh? And your pappy got you into a Champaign unit, Texas Air National Guard, and that was too close to combat. So you headed for Alabama and disappeared, and now you have the audacity? Well, I'll tell you what. Afghanistan veterans have expressed really disbelief at those comments. As a press release at boatvets.org. Yeah. Combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom say there's nothing romantic about it. They express shock that Mr. Bush believes the war is romantic and exciting. Here's a few examples coming into votevets.org from people who have actually been there, George. Not like you and your punk-ass vice president. No. People who have really gone into the gore and the blood and the dismemberment and the death and the screaming and the stink. The stuff you find romantic, you freak. Brandon Friedman, Operation Enduring Freedom veteran, 2001 to 2002, U.S. Army. Here's what he had to say. Quote, so there you have it. We finally obtained empirical evidence proving that President Bush has absolutely no idea what war is about. A commander-in-chief with such a childlike view of combat is in no way fit to lead America's armed forces during a time of conflict. Most of us in the military have known that the president was clueless on military matters, but I don't think many of us could have foreseen his statement that confronting danger in Afghanistan is in some ways romantic. Having served in eastern Afghanistan myself, I can assure you that there is nothing romantic about being decisively engaged with Taliban elements for 15 months at a time. It's a shame President Bush didn't feel that Vietnam would be a fantastic experience, because if he'd chosen not to avoid service during that conflict, or if he'd even read a book about war, he would likely not think to publicly describe the war in Afghanistan as exciting. Brian McGuff, Operation Enduring Freedom veteran, 2001-2002, Army, quote, as a combat wounded veteran who served in Afghanistan, I have to agree with the president's assertion that the war in Afghanistan is romantic. There was nothing romantic about having to dig through our trash during Operation Anaconda because we ran out of food. As American soldiers always do, we accomplished the mission, but there was nothing romantic about it. Jim Morin, Operation Enduring Freedom veteran, 2003, U.S. Army, quote, I didn't feel like there was anything romantic in not seeing my daughter grow up, or in watching Afghan children starve to death, or in explaining repeated deployment extensions to my soldiers, in explaining to Afghans that we were there to keep them safe while knowing that we would never have enough troops to actually do so. No, Mr. President, there's nothing romantic about being sent on an important mission and not being given the tools to accomplish it. Will King, Operation Enduring Freedom veteran, 2002, Army, quote, President Bush is wrong. I seriously doubt any of us infantrymen in Operation Anaconda found it exciting or romantic when the Taliban were firing mortar rounds at us and our fellow soldiers. Jesus God, it just, I mean, every time this freak opens his mouth, and you Republicans, you conservatives who lurk around this program, what do you say to that, huh? Romantic? Exciting? Maybe for someone like Ernest Hemingway in the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, but for this freak, this coward, this childlike maniac who has sent hundreds of thousands of people to their deaths, and he finds it romantic. He finds it romantic and exciting, and he wishes he were young so he could join in the play. Jesus God. Doesn't stop with this guy, does it? Arrogant little puppy standing up there like he's a real man. You know, I just wonder how does the U.S. military command, I mean the really ranking officers, the people who have been in combat and who have sent other people into combat, what do they talk about when they're sitting around quietly in their quarters with other officers of equal rank talking completely off the record. What do they say about this dumb bastard? They must sit there and just shake their heads and think, Jesus, God, you know, I've been in for 35 years. I've worked my ass off for this fourth star. And I can't believe what this little nutball is saying. I can't believe it.
So you think you're a winner, but you're losing again. The cards have already been dealt, and the hand that you hold means nothing at all. Cause knowing is all that is left. So you think you're a coward, but you're only.
Truth seekers, time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, or before the hour, or somewhere near the hour. Hell, I don't know. Don't forget, over the weekend, warcomeshome.org. 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 Tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m., they'll be streaming live audio and video of the Winter Soldier, Iraq and Afghanistan 2008 convocation soldiers who will be talking, combat soldiers, not cowardly chicken thugs like George W. Bush talking about the romance, soldiers who've been there, soldiers, Marines, people who have been there, who've been in the combat. So try to catch some of it tomorrow. If you have Free Speech Television, Free Speech FSTV channel, it's there. Okay, I want to do some of the Spush sound. You've got to hear this. He visits the Economic Club of New York, and he is as good at math as he is at foreign policy. He opens up with a little instruction to these assembled economists about how the economy works. You know, it's got a lot of romance in it. I'm sure they were impressed. And he tosses in a little revisionist history for good measure. So how to overcome the current economic disaster? Why, it's up to the American people to come up with the solution. That's what he said. That's what he said.
First of all, in a free market, there's going to be good times and bad times.
Really?
That's how markets work. There'll be ups and downs. And after 52 consecutive months of job growth, which is a record.
Yeah.
Our economy obviously is going through a tough time.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, okay, good.
It's going through a tough time in the housing market, and it's going through a tough time in the financial markets.
Yeah, well, how did that happen?
Inherited recession.
You inherited a recession?
And then there was the attacks of September the 11th, 2001, which many of you saw firsthand.
Yeah, okay.
And you know full well how that affected our economy.
Yeah, it was awful.
And then we had corporate scandals.
From your Enron buddies.
And then we had devastating natural disasters.
Katrina.
And the interesting thing,
yeah,
every time, this economy has bounced back better and stronger than before.
Yay!
So I'm coming to you as an optimistic fellow. I've seen what happens when America deals with difficulty. I believe that we're a resilient economy. And I believe that the ingenuity and resolve of the American people is what helps us deal with these issues. And it's going to happen again.
Oh, okay. So, you want to step outside and honk up another line, George? So, we're going to come through this recession that Bush falsely claims he inherited. And we're going to do it as a result of American ingenuity. How does that work exactly? How do we creatively battle corporate greed and tax cuts to the wealthy and deficit spending and $2 billion a month on illegal oil wars and unfair trade agreements and lack of health care and selling our debt to China and unregulated criminal predatory mortgage lending? Let me ask you something, chuckle nuts. How do we, the American people, ingeniously find a solution to your failed economic policies, you psychopath? My God. So, why is Bush optimistic that we're not in a recession and we'll come out of this mess? His magical $300 tax rebates are on the way. Yeehaw! Happy days are here again. Yeah, now Americans can go buy those three tanks of gas and a bag of groceries. That'll save our faltering economy. Wow! This freak is really living on Fantasy Island. Deplane! Deplane!
These are tough times. Growth fell to 0.6% in the fourth quarter of last year.
What does that mean?
It's clearly slow.
Oh, okay.
Economy shed more than 80,000 jobs in 2 months.
What does that mean?
Prices are up at the gas pump and in the supermarket.
What does that mean?
Housing values are down. Hard-working Americans.
Yeah?
Are concerned.
Oh.
They're concerned about their families.
Really?
And they're concerned about making their bills.
And paying them, too.
Fortunately, we recognized the slowdown early.
You did?
And took action. And it was decisive action.
Yes!
The package will provide tax rebates to more than 130 million households.
Holy God!
And the purpose is to boost consumer spending. The purpose is to try to offset the loss of wealth if the value of your home has gone down.
$300?
Buoy the consumer.
$300?
The rebates haven't been put in the mail yet.
Oh,
In other words, this aspect of the plan hadn't taken to effect.
Oh!
There's a lot of Americans who've heard about the plan.
Yeah?
A lot of them are a little skeptical about this checks in the mail stuff that the federal government talks about. But it's coming.
Yeah. Isn't poverty a hoot? Hot damn. Isn't unemployment just a real knee slapper? Is it a lot of fun to pull up to a gas station and realize that $10 will get you 2.5 gallons? Son of a bitch, that is so funny, isn't it, George? Huh? Let's all get together now. 3, 2, 1. Ho, 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 ho. Hot damn. $600. There's a $300. Oh, yeah, that'll save the value of your home. Let me see. Your house went down 40 grand in value in the last 3 months. You're upside down in the payments. You're never going to get out. But by God, here's 300 bucks for you, Sparky. This man's insane. This man makes... He's a functioning idiot. And he's barely functioning. He makes John McCain look like a font of rationality and wisdom. Before the moron at the microphone took questions, he closed his little speech with this brilliant analogy of our economy as a car being driven into a ditch. And then he restates his position as the decider, who, ironically, still, it's 5 minutes later, and he still wants the American people to come up with the solution to his failed economy. Oh.
I appreciate you letting me give a chance to come by to speak to you. I'm,
nuts.
You know,
nuts.
I guess the best way to describe government policy is like a person trying to drive a car in a rough patch.
A rough patch?
If you ever get stuck in a situation like that, you know full well it's important not to overcorrect.
Why?
Because when you overcorrect, you end up in the ditch.
Oh, damn, is that right? That's right, that's right.
And so it's important to be steady.
And do nothing.
And to keep your eyes on the horizon.
As you drive off a cliff.
We're going to deal with the issues as we see them.
Oh, good.
We're not afraid to make decisions. This administration is not afraid to act.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good.
We saw a problem coming and we acted quickly.
You're damn right.
We're not afraid to take on issues.
Not at all.
But we'll do so in a way that respects the ingenuity of the American people. That bolsters the entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah.
And that ensures when we make it through this rough patch, our driving's going to be more smooth.
What? What? What in the hell? Oh, now that's wonderful. Okay. Okay. Here's Mr. Homeowner. No, no. Here's Mr. Wish-He-Was-A-Homeowner sitting at home listening to this drivel. Where's he going to hear it? Well, on the Malloy program, because the networks aren't going to feed you this. Oh, no. So to solve everything, all we need are platitudes. We're not afraid to act. We're not afraid to make decisions. Of course, every decision we make is wrong, but we're not afraid to make them. And we saw this problem coming because, you know, that goddamn Bill Clinton handed me a recession. He really did. What? Budget surplus. Quiet. Secret Service, go get that guy. Get him. Get his ass out of here.
We're not afraid to take on issues.
But we're going to do it in a way that respects the ingenuity of the American people. We're not going to try to help them. We're going to stand back and say, go ahead, ingenuity of the American people. Be ingenuity stuff. Do ingenuity stuff. Go, 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 go. No health care. The dollar tanking. The price of gas and the price of food starting to move up off the marker. Stock market's in the toilet. The debt is unbelievable. Jobs have disappeared. Your house is worth 40% less than what you owe on it. Now get ingenuity-like. You little consumers, when you get your $300, goddammit, go buy something. That'll straighten it all out. Go on over there to Target. Buy some of that Chinese crap. Go to Walmart. Get some of that stuff from Vietnam. Problem is, you're not shopping enough. I told you dumb sons of bitches after those terrorists hit us. Go shopping! Good God. Help me. Help me. Someone please grab my microphone. Get it away from me before I just go absolutely stark raving insane listening to this. Do we have any listeners left? I don't think so, Kat. I think everybody fled. Listening to this tripe, this garbage, this insanity from this dribbling idiot.
It is kind of sad that his solution to everything seems to be go shopping. It's like, he's just getting advice from Dana Perino. Like, all we have to do is go to the mall, and there's like a really cool sale at Nordstrom's, and I can get some new shoes and maybe a purse too, and that'll cure everything. Can I have $300?
Oh, God. Well, stick around, please. We have a couple more of these sound bites. If you can handle it, if you want to leave and come back, I understand. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
The sign says there's no vacancy. As you stare at me vacantly, the lights are out, but I can't see. There's nobody home. Oh, no, there's nobody home. I love your smile, but when you talk, there's nobody home. I love it when you speak your mind. Nobody home. It's nice to have some quiet time. There's nobody home. The sign says there's no vacancy, but everything you say to me convinces me more.
If you're paying taxes, you're going to have tax relief. The government ought not to pay favors. Seems to make a fair way to me to make policy.
What? 10 before the hour. All right. Return with us to the Economic Club of New York today. After Chucklenuts gave his speech, his moment of enlightenment that was so profound, half the people there thought they should start chanting Om. Now comes the fun Q&A session, where the economists, the actual, by God, economists, get to ask Chucklenuts questions about, well, the economy. The first one says, Mr. President, you raised trade in your speech very passionately, and you mentioned that a confident nation opens its borders, and there does seem to be a lack of confidence in this country. Would you give us a diagnosis of why we find ourselves in the situation we do today? Now, the question is about trade. But listen, as Bush rambles around the answer, talking about protecting America, the FISA wiretapping bill, 9/11, fighting AIDS in Africa. Listen.
Sometimes when times are tough, it's easy to... It's much easier to find, you know, somebody else to blame.
Like you've been doing.
And sometimes that somebody else that's easier to blame is somebody in a distant land.
Like,
as a matter of fact, I dedicated part of my State of the Union address a couple of years ago to this very theme.
Well, thank you.
And what concerns me is that the United States of America will become fatigued when it comes to fighting off tyrants.
Trade, economy.
Or say it's too hard to spread liberty.
Trade.
Or use the excuse that just because freedom hadn't flourished in parts of the world, therefore it's not worth trying.
The economy.
And that as a result, we kind of retrench and lose confidence in the values that have made us a great nation in the first place. But these aren't American values. They're universal values.
Trade, economy.
And the danger of getting tired during this world is any retreat by the America was going to be to the benefit of those who want to do us harm. Now, I understand that since September the 11th, that the great tendency is to say we're no longer in danger.
Trade, the economy.
Well, that's false. That's false hope. It's either disingenuous or naive, and either one of those attitudes is unrealistic. And the biggest job we've got is to protect the American people.
Trade.
Harm.
Trade.
That's why we better figure out what the enemy's saying on their telephones. And I've got great faith in the transformative power of liberty.
The economy.
And that's what I believe is going to happen in the Middle East.
Trade.
And I understand it undermines the argument of the stabilityites. People say, you just got to worry about stability.
Trade!
And I'm saying we better worry about the conditions that caused 19 kids to kill us in the first place. And the best way to deal with hopelessness is to fight disease like we're doing in Africa.
Remind me, what was the question again? Jesus, God in heaven, did you just hear that?
You dork.
Did you hear this? Would you give us a diagnosis of why we find ourselves in a situation in this country today that is less than confident about a nation with open trade borders? That's the question. Have you ever heard anything like that in your life? Last bit of wit and wisdom from this unelected idiot. This economist wants to know about the high cost of living and inflation. Mr. President, gasoline is selling for $4 a gallon in some parts of the country. Food prices are also rising very fast. Grain prices, meat prices, health care prices, and the dollar's weak. Around the world, hitting a record low this week against the euro. The price of gold is over $1,000 an ounce. Many observers say, oh, this means that we have an inflation problem. Do you agree with them? And what can be done about it?
I recognize economies go up and down.
Boing, boing.
It's important for us to put policy in place.
Boing.
That sends a signal.
Boing.
That our economy is going to be strong.
Boing,
and open
boing.
For business, which will strength, you know, which supports the strong dollar policy.
Boing, boing.
Such as not doing something foolish during this economic period that'll make it harder to grow. Such as rejecting. Shutting down capital from coming into this country.
Boing.
Such as announcing that, you know, or articulating a belief that making the tax cuts permanent takes uncertainty out of the system.
Boing, boing, come again? Did he just say making the tax cuts permanent shouldn't be articulated? What the hell does that mean? I thought that's what he wanted. And how are we shutting down capital coming in this country? All I see is capital leaving this country, going to pay the interest on our debt to China, or to businesses that have moved their workforce to China, or someplace or something. Boing, boing, boing. We're going to break this answer down into parts because the stream of consciousness answer from ADD boy is too confusing to follow, even for a room full of experts. Listen to the rambling man. Remember, the question was about prices, and the last one was about economy. Can anybody tell me what the hockey puck he's talking about? No. You can't. We have one more, but I think I'm going to hold on to it until we come back from the break. Because in this one, you will hear Minimind address the question about the high cost of energy. And in his answer, you'll hear the words fungible, hogs, corn, battery, dodge, fungible, consequence. Ois. I don't know what ois is, but you will hear him talk about making us less dependent on ois. Stick around. You don't want to miss this. The only upside to any of this is that someday you'll be able to sit your grandchildren down and say, come here, Johnny. Come here, Sally. Sit up here on Grandpa's lap. Let me tell you
a story you're not going to believe. It started December 12th, 2000. That's a long time ago. That's when the U.S. Supreme Court stopped the vote counting. And the next thing you knew it, we had a president who was talking to us about fungible. Now sit back, kids. You got your popcorn? Good. Grandpa's going to tell you a story you're not going to believe.
Danger of getting tired during this world is any retreat by the America was going to be to the benefit of those who want to do us harm. And I'm saying we better worry about the conditions that caused 19 kids to kill us in the first place. That's why we better figure out what the enemy's saying on their telephones.
Muhammad Atta was a kid? Well, if you're serious, George, about finding out why 19 kids tried or killed us to begin with, I can point you in the direction of the Middle East. Start there. Or if you want to go back in history and look at, 1,300 years of butchering and disrespecting Muslims, you know, taking their land, taking their oil. You want to talk about Algeria? You want to talk about Iran? What do you want to talk about, pal? Welcome back to the Molloy Program on Nova M Radio. I don't know if you've, of course, you wouldn't be paying any attention to the Weather Channel. You're listening to the program, but apparently we've had a couple of tornadoes hit Atlanta. Thank God we're out here in the foothills. The CNN Center, the windows are all blown out. The Georgia Dome, there's a football, basketball tournament going on down here. The roof was blown off. People are, I don't know how many injuries they're talking about yet, but we mentioned earlier about we may lose it. We heard the storms out here outside just whipping through the hills here. Yeah. But it seems like the worst of it is over, and we survived, just like George Bush. By God, we got all ingenuity on it, didn't we, Kathy, and survived. All right, I want to play the last soundbite for you, and then we're going to replay the one where the economy, where the economist asked about the economy. We want to replay it again because this is the most, seriously, the most rambling, insane answer I think this freak has come up with since he illegally assume power in this country. But let's do this last one. This is Mini Mind addressing the part of the question about the high cost of energy. Now listen, you'll hear fungible, corn, hogs, overseas. Oh, and also the king of Saudi. The king of Saudi, he mentions that, and he also mentions oys. Oys. Ready? 3, 2, 1!
Energy. The Congress believes we shouldn't be drilling for oil and gas in a productive part of our country, like Anwar, because it'll destroy the environment, which in fact it won't. And look, I'm an alternatives fuel guy. I believe that's important. As a matter of fact, we've mightily expanded the use of ethanol. Slight consequence if you rely upon corn to grow your hogs. You know, I firmly believe people in New York City are going to be driving automobiles on battery. Relatively quickly, and it's not going to be like a golf cart. We frankly have got policies that make it harder for us to become less dependent on oil. You talk about the price of oil, yeah, it's high.
Oice.
It's high because demand is greater than supply. That's why it's high.
When
I was overseas in the Middle East, people said, did you talk to the king of Saudi about oil prices? Of course I did. I reminded him two things. One, you better be careful about affecting markets.
Ooh, that scared him.
Reminding him that oil is fungible, even though we get most of our oil, by the way, from Canada and Mexico, oil is fungible. Our energy policy hadn't been very wise up to now.
What's fungible?
Anyway, I'm going to dodge the rest of your question. Thank you for your time.
Ha, 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 economic meltdowns are so funny. Ha, 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 ha.
No, the reason the price of oil, George, is $108 a barrel has to do with speculation. The supply is consistent. Never mind. Never mind. I'm an alternative fuel guy. We got to become less dependent on oil. When I was overseas in the Middle East, people said, "Did you talk to the king of Saudi?" Of course. I remind him two things. I love holding his hand. And when you kiss me like that, shake, close your goddamn mouth. I'm tired of your tongue. Oil's fungible. Our energy policy hadn't been very wise up to now. What? Our energy policy hasn't been very wise up to now. He said that. He said that. Why isn't that soundbite cut out and put into every single Obama or Clinton commercial? Our energy policy hadn't been very wise up to now. Because it's only benefited the oil companies. Oh, I'll bet the invisible Dick Cheney just cringed when he heard that one today. Where's Dick Cheney? Where's he trying to start a war? Where is he? Where is that unconscionable robotic bastard? Has anyone seen Cheney? Where's Cheney? Where is he?
You better be careful. I told him. Well, I told the king of Saudi. You better be careful about affecting markets. And he started shaking so hard his caftan fell off. Boy, you want to know what the Scotch people wear under their kilts? You ought to see what they wear under their caftans. Is that what that is? A caftan?
I'm going to dodge the rest of your question because I don't remember what the hell the question was. Anybody see my Ritalin? Was I talking about the 19 killers again? You know, those kids that came over here and killed us? Aid to Africa? Did I leave a cheeseburger lying around here? Hello? What time is it? It's nap time, isn't it? No. It's, what is it, 10 o'clock? Is that morning or night? I can't tell anymore. You got to grow your hogs. You know, people living in New York City are going to be driving automobiles on battery. And it's not going to be a golf cart. Did I talk about my rebate check? What have I missed? Anything? Okay. Thank you for your time. Bye. Oh, God. Okay, now, because you've been a good audience tonight, because you've been such sweethearts, we're going to play that soundbite again, where the economist asked, the first economist, economist number one, asked this.
Mr. President.
Right, now wait. Just keep in mind as you listen to this, the question is about trade. About trade and you know, economy things. But listen, as Chucklenuts goes insane. He has a complete breakdown. He's talking about 19 kids that came and killed us and FISA wiretapping and AIDS in Africa. And, you know, somebody ought to say to him before he comes out, George, stop smoking this crap if you can't stay on topic. But here we go. The economist says,
Mr. President, you raised trade in your speech very passionately, and you mentioned that a confident nation opens its borders. And there does seem to be a lack of confidence in this country right now. Would you give us a diagnosis of why we find ourselves in the situation that we do today?
Sometimes when times are tough, it's much easier to find, you know, somebody else to blame. And And sometimes that somebody else that's easier to blame is somebody in a distant land. As a matter of fact, I dedicated part of my State of the Union address a couple of years ago to this very theme.
Oh.
And what concerns me is that the United States of America will become fatigued when it comes to fighting off tyrants. Or say it's too hard to spread liberty.
Trade?
Or use the excuse that just because freedom hadn't flourished in parts of the world, therefore it's not worth trying.
Economy?
And that as a result, we kind of retrench and lose confidence in our values that have made us a great nation in the first place. But these aren't American values. They're universal values.
Trade?
And the danger of getting tired during this world is any retreat by the America was going to be to the benefit of those who want to do us harm. Now, I understand that since September the 11th, that the great tendency is to say we're no longer in danger. Well, that's false.
Oh, okay.
That's false hope.
Oh.
It's either disingenuous or naive, and either one of those attitudes is unrealistic.
Yeah?
And the biggest job we've got is to protect the American people.
From what?
From harm.
Harm.
That's why we better figure out what the enemy's saying on their telephones.
Trade?
And I've got great faith in the transformative power of liberty.
The economy?
And that's what I believe is going to happen in the Middle East.
To whom?
And I understand it undermines the argument of the stabilityites.
The who?
People say, well, you just got to worry about stability.
Oh.
And I'm saying we better worry about the conditions that caused 19 kids to kill us in the first place. And the best way to deal with hopelessness is to fight disease like we're doing in Africa.
Yes! Oh, excuse me. I thought I was supposed to stand up and cheer there. The danger of getting tired during this world. We might get tired during this world. And any retreat by the America, I've never heard anything like this. Never. By anybody. Oh, yeah, I did. I did. My uncle, who came back from World War II, he fought in France, and he came back just completely. Back then, they called it shell shock. And we used to tease him when he got older, because when we teased him, he would start screaming about the Germans were coming. That was a lot of fun.
I'd like to burn this textbook. I hate this stuff so much. Math sucks. Math sucks. Sometimes I think that I don't know that much.
A lot of gas reserves around the world. Gas can only be transported by ship, though, when you liquefy it, when you put it in solid form.
Jesus. 22 past the hour. All right, we have a new feature of the program. This is called A Moment with Bob. Hey, Mike. A $110 million renovation of the National Archives building on Pennsylvania Avenue in D.C. was completed in late 2003. The National Archives building is where the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights are displayed in new, airtight, state-of-the-art cases with a new security system provided by Diebold Incorporated. Two statues stand outside the National Archives. One is called Study the Past, and the other explains why. What is past is prologue. After visiting the National Archives, one cannot help feeling the vital necessity and responsibility of studying and reporting history, an attribute completely lacking in our mainstream media. If the CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, CNN, MSNBC news divisions had lived up to their obligation of informing the public of pertinent historical facts, we could have identified as criminals the men who have run for and been elected to public office for generations. There would have been no Bush crime family. George Herbert Burt Walker and his son Prescott Bush were members of the conspiracy to overthrow our government in 1933. George Herbert Walker and Prescott Bush worked directly to finance Hitler with the Union Banking Corporation. Mr. Walker took over the North American operations of the Hamburg America line, a cover for IG Farben's Nazi espionage unit in the United States. The shipping line smuggled in German agents, propaganda, and money for bribing American politicians to see things Hitler's way. The holding company was Walker's American Shipping and Commerce. In 1942, the U.S. government charged Prescott Bush with running Nazi front groups in the United States. Under the Trading with the Enemy Act, all the shares of the Union Banking Corporation were seized. Those assets were held by the government for the duration of the war and then returned afterward. Union Banking Corporation was dissolved in 1951. Prescott Bush cleared $1.5 million from his Nazi investments and used the cash to launch Bush family investments in the Texas energy industry. In 1952, Prescott Bush was elected to the U.S. Senate. In 1988, George Herbert Walker's grandson, Prescott Bush's son, George Herbert Walker Bush, was elected president. He oversaw one of the most massive frauds ever perpetrated upon taxpayers in American history, the savings and loan scandal brewing since the Reagan-Bush administration took office in 1981, exploded. If the insolvent savings and loans had been shut down in 1980, the government's insurance fund would have covered the losses and only administrative costs would have been incurred. If they'd been liquidated in May of 85, it would have cost less than $16 billion. But by the end of 1985, the costs were estimated at $30 billion. The ultimate cost of the savings and loan bailout will be $950 billion. That comes to about $32 billion a year, and American taxpayers are locked into it for 30 years, no matter what we do or who we elect. George W. Bush, great-grandson and grandson of traitors, Nazi supporters, and war profiteers, and son of George Herbert Walker Bush, is presiding over another gigantic financial meltdown that will be repaid by the American taxpayers. And this is just the beginning. As of March 1, 2008, analysts from three large financial institutions estimate the subprime mortgage crisis impact will be between $350 and $600 billion. Add to that the projected $3 trillion cost of the Iraq war and occupation. If any mainstream media institution in this country had operated on the principle of what's past is prologue, you know, report the facts, the Bush crime family and their confederates would have been in prison, not public or corporate office. And we could have fired the guy who suggested awarding the contract to provide security for the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights to Diebold. Bob.
Maggie comes sleep, but face full of black soot. Talking at the heat, puts plants in the bed, but phone's tapped anyway. Maggie says a minute, say they must bust an early man. Orders from the DA. Look out, kid, don't matter what you did. But walk on your tiptoes, don't tie no bows. Better stay away from those that care out of fire hose. Keep a clean nose, wash the clean clothes. You don't need a weatherman to know it's where the wind blows. Oh, get sick, get well.
Your money grow, you know it compounds over time, which means money grows and grows bigger and bigger and bigger.
Jesus God. How did this happen? How did this happen? It's funny, isn't it? Oh, I laugh all the time until I realize this sick son of a bitch is responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths. My God. And the country literally has been destroyed. Oh, no. The buildings are still up and the trees are still the ones that tornadoes don't knock down. Unless you check, you know, and take a look down in that part of the world where Katrina hit, as he likes to put it. I mean, the bridges are still up, except the ones that aren't. The kids still go to school. But this psychopathic bastard has destroyed the country. And the gibbering, this gibbering, maniacal crap that comes out of his mouth. What is it? Oh, stop yelling, Mike. Oh, by the way, the piece from Bob, A Moment with Bob, that's Bob Alexander, who has superbeans.com. If you haven't been to that website, yeah, this is a free plug. If you haven't been to the website, go. Superbeans.com. That coffee is, sometimes I think it's the only damn thing that keeps me going. You know, when I get pumped like this, and the weird part of it is, as good as that coffee is, I get so cranked on adrenaline and that other stuff. What's the other stuff? Norepinephrine or whatever. All that stuff that comes flowing out of your... What? Kathy, come on. Where does it come from? Where does this stuff come from?
That would be your adrenal glands, Mike.
Thank you. And it kind of neutralizes whatever caffeine. When I finish this program, it's midnight here in the East, and it usually takes me, oh, I don't know, if I really want to go to sleep, it takes about 15 minutes. I drop right off, and I think to myself, Jesus, I'm drinking coffee that's about 9,000% caffeine, and it tastes wonderful, and nothing happens. Anyway, A Moment with Bob, we will occasionally share with you. And if you really like what you hear, please don't write to me and ask me for a copy of it. I just can't. When we get a real website up, which will be pretty soon, maybe I can post this kind of stuff. And when Bridget Wolf at fairywoodland.com, when she writes stuff and I read it, and then I get, you know, it's very poignant stuff. And you know, between Bob and Bridget, I get all these, you know, oh, that was wonderful. Will you send me a copy? I'd love to, but it's just too damn much work. So, you know, maybe when we get a real website up, instead of what we have now, that is, there's a picture of me up there. It's what, 25 years old? Oh, my God. But that's only because that's all we could give Mark Marshall way back in the day when he put that together. But we're almost ready with the new website. And then we'll be able to post this stuff where you can just, you know, cut and paste it and take it. So, there's that. Now, let's go to phone calls here. Oh, my God, an hour and 42 minutes? Evan's been holding on. Evan, welcome to the program. Thanks for your patience.
No problem. excuse me.
you just blew the transmitter, but that's all right. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I listened to some of the Winter Soldier comments or testimony too. That was really heavy.
Did you watch some of that? It's mind-boggling to see. To see these guys sitting there, and reporting the kind of stuff that this filthy media in this country will not report, and the kind of stuff that Bush and McCain and the rest of these killers say isn't happening. It's unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, but my comment was about the Carlyle Group. Now, everybody has been, I've been seeing this stuff in the newspaper about Bear Stearns,
right,
and how they were getting their bailout.
Yeah.
But what happened, I was checking up on Huffington Post, and what really was going on there is Bear Stearns lent Carlyle Group a bad loan.
Oh,
Carlyle is losing. Even Carlyle is losing money.
Doesn't that break your heart?
Oh, yeah.
Don't you just want to take up a collection and send it to these poor bastards that run the Carlyle Group? I mean, doesn't it just move you?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, they're the ones, they're actually the one. What's being reported is Bear Stearns is on the brink.
Uh-huh.
But they're on the brink because Carlyle is past the brink. And they're not the only ones that loaned them money. And why are people loaning them money when they have all of these and they own, you know, half of everything?
It's a game that you and I are not invited to play Evan. I could no more answer the question of what goes on that level of money manipulation, on the level that sets up a situation where so-called lenders can make a fortune, and then 8 months to 3 years later, the house of cards they constructed collapses, and all these people are on the verge of losing their homes. And the people who ran the scam, the filthy pigs who ran the scam, are just laughing when they go to their vacations in Jamaica or in the South Pacific on their 200-foot yachts. They laugh. They laugh at what they did to us. They laugh. I'll tell you, one of the key factors in revolution, I mean armed open combat within a society, one of the key indicators that it's about to happen is when income disparity reaches such a level that the top 1, 2, 3, 5% is just filthy wealthy, and the bottom 30, 40, 50% are struggling to hold on. That's a tipping point. That's one of the clear indications of when a revolution occurs. Now, the revolution always arises out of the middle class. If the middle class is murdered, as Bush is trying to do, and the neocons are trying to do before the revolution comes, then it doesn't come. But I've been reading a lot of stuff lately about full-blown, full-scale, open, armed revolution in other countries. What precipitated these events? Where the economy was, if there was an economy? Where was the church? Where was the educational system? Where was government? And I'll tell you, the more I read this stuff, the more I start to get really nervous. I realize we're a country, for the most part, of drones who just sit around and watch television. But there comes a tipping point where it's kind of out of our hands and stuff starts happening. So,
I have one more thing. If you Google too big to bail out and then put MP3 next to that,
yeah,
there's this interview with Webster Tarpley,
right,
and he just laid all of this out. I just found this, last year he laid all of this out. Mentioned Bear Stearns by name.
What is it? Too big to bail out / MP3 or what?
No, too big to bail out in quotes.
Okay.
And then right next to that, MP3.
And do a Google on that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sure people are doing it right now. Evan, thanks. I got to go, man. Thanks a lot. Yep. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas, listening on KPNY. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Mike. I can hear the wind.
You have no idea what happened in downtown Atlanta. I had no idea.
Yeah, I've been on CNN.com, so I've seen that there's been quite a bit of damage.
They're talking about dozens injured. We heard this thing roar through, and I notified our engineer, Ian, we may go off the air. Be ready. This you don't get tornadoes in the middle of cities the size of Atlanta, but apparently we did, so whatever.
Have you ever seen The Day After Tomorrow?
Oh, yeah, I saw it.
But there's no global warming, you know.
Well, of course not. But the real reason you called...
Yeah, before I start, though, I just have to do a quick plug. I don't usually surrender myself to a product placement, but I decided to give in on the Super Beans coffee. I took your recommendation of the Peaberry Dark Roast, I hope it was, because that's what I got. And, oh, my God, it's so wonderful. It's like President Kucinich mixed with pure joy, bliss in my mouth. I can't describe
it. All right.
Okay. But I just had to do that. I had to say that because it's just so wonderful.
No, it is good stuff. It really is good stuff.
I have to say, though, what you were talking about earlier with Bush, first the 19 kids, I think that statement was written by Dick Cheney and given to Bush because you have to remember Dick Cheney is 10,000 years old.
That's true.
So compared to him, the hijackers were just kids.
That's true. Kindergartners running around trying to figure out what to do on a Tuesday or whatever the hell it was after morning, right? Yeah, okay.
Exactly. And, you know, the whole Bush was talking about, and the war and how it's so romantic. But and I think I'm quoting you right when you were quoting it, saying he said, it's so romantic, it's so, you know. Was he just saying that it was arousing or, you know, erotic or something?
Well, I mean, Matthew, he was probably getting to that point. I wouldn't be surprised, this psychopath. Matthew, I hate to do this, pal, but I've got to move on. We're almost out of time here, and now we got a break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Ten before the hour, and the crazy part, the prescient part on the part of your humble and obedient service about a servant on all this bad weather we had here. Three days ago, we had six pine trees and a huge red oak that was absolutely hollow inside, about 110-foot tree, taken down by a tree company. We had an arborist come out first and say, yeah, these are dead. And the odd thing about these huge trees, they look alive, but they're dead. And I am so glad that red oak, and the guy that took it down, he said it was about 80 years old. He said if this would have been a white oak, it probably would have been about 120 years old, but a red oak. And when they got down to the base, the circumference of the base had to be what, Kathy? 20 feet around that sucker. And when they got down to that part, it was hollow inside. And that damn thing would have come right down on this house. It would have. Yes?
Did you? You made a comment. I was just going to make a pithy comment, but it's not funny anymore.
Oh.
Because what you said was, you know, it looks alive on the outside, but it's dead on the inside. And I said, I was going to say, much like Cheney.
I'm glad you decided not to say that. Quick email here from Prairie 2 regarding Bush's comments tonight that we played for you. He said that he supports a strong dollar policy. And Prairie 2 writes, while he has been president, gold has gone from $275 to $1,000 an ounce. Oil from $10 to $110 a barrel. Euros from 80 cents to $1.60. Wheat from $3 a bushel to $18 a bushel. Banks are collapsing despite $100 billion worth of Fed bailouts. And this crazy son of a bitch says he supports a strong dollar policy. Where? In fantasy land? In Coke world? Where does he support it? Thanks to the crew for tonight and this week. Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch, the podcast manager for Nova M. Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher. Bridget Wolf is our writer in residence. And if I haven't mentioned it lately, become a Nova M founding member, please. You'll love it. You'll get free downloads and podcasts when you want them. You also get access to special videos and additional features, including the video from the Phoenix event that I was fortunate enough to attend last month with Scott Ritter and about 700 close and personal friends from the Phoenix area. So go to NovaMradio.com and you can sign up. It's a penny under $10 a month or $120 a year, and you get all sorts of things, including a new pony if you're good. All right, NovaMradio.com. Scott is calling from Denver, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Mike. I'm just pulling into Denver after a six-day trip. I've got almost 4,000 miles down, and my fuel bill this week is going to be pushing $3,000.
Oh, my God.
People just don't understand unless the figures are put in front of them, and that's one thing that you do, and thank God you come back every night because you're putting the information out there. People need to hear this. They need to hear it over and over and over again. I know most of the truck drivers. I'm an owner-operator. 2 years ago, my fuel bill was $1,200 a week. Now it's $3,000 a week.
Mm.
Next month it'll be pushing $4,000 a week. People need to know the facts. They need to know the numbers. Eventually, we're going to stop running. And your analogy of your tree, your red oak, is the United States. It looks alive on the outside, mm-hmm. but by God, Mike, it's dead on the inside. And after 100 hours in 6 days, I'm dead. And it's every single week, and I can't keep it up.
I hear you, Scott. I hear you. Do you use gasoline or diesel?
It's diesel. I own an operator. I own a truck.
Mm.
I own one truck. I get 7 miles a gallon because I'm a mechanic and I can keep it running.
Mm-hmm.
Most guys get fired. So I'm paying $3,000 a week. I've got friends paying $4,000 a week already for fuel.
Good God.
And it's the numbers. I mean, if people just think, how would you come up with $4,000 a week for just anything?
No.
And then every truck you drive past think he's spending that every week. But I want to thank you for coming back every night. I know it must be frustrating as hell for you because it's the same thing every time. But you got to keep putting the word out there. Eventually, everybody's going to stop moving, and we're all going to look in the right direction, and something's going to happen.
I hear you, Scott.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you very much.
Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. And as far as you know, Scott saying thanks to me for being here. Stop and think a minute about what these over-the-road truckers are dealing with. Scott is right on. You know, don't thank me for any. I don't do a damn thing. I sit here and do a radio program. People like Scott and these over-the-road truckers. You know, that's one thing Americans we never stop and consider. We never stop and consider what's going to happen. What's going to happen when these truck drivers can no longer afford to do it? Scott doesn't want to say it, I don't think, because he's like a lot of these guys. He's hoping against hope that something happens. But when the trucks stop, when all these trucks stop, Truth Seeker, the country stops. That is as much of a fact as rain falls. It doesn't rise. So I'm going to spend the next 2 days trying to not think. And guys like Scott and truck drivers who have to constantly think, I don't know, man. I don't know what to say. We're in some trouble, Truth Seekers. We really are, and I hope we can get out of it. I'll see you Monday. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.